Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Morning Show podcast for another bumper episode.
Ahead for you, we speak with reality TV fave and son of Caitlyn Jenner, Brandon Jenner. He joins us direct from LA.
Plus, Danny Minogue is celebrating two big milestones this year. Find out why Danny is cracking open the bubbly.
And the surprising ways you could be fired. You won't believe some of the reasons people have been sacked from their jobs.
But we begin with TV royalty and one of the first stars of the reality genre, Kelly Osbourne.
Well, she's known for her flair, for fashion and total lack of filter. Kelly Osbourne is always herself, and that's why she has millions of followers right across the globe. But while the Osbournes may not have had the easiest ride into 2021, the British superstar isn't ready to back down.
OK, folks, strap yourselves in because Kelly has been given her very own show. What could possibly go wrong? Partnering up with her best friend to reveal all about life in the spotlight, from sobriety to weight loss, fame and failure. Take it from us when we say nothing is off limits. We love that.
We're excited to welcome Kelly Osbourne back to the Morning Show. Hi, Kelly. Great to see you again.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey.
Looking amazing. Last time you joined us, I think you put a bra on your face.
Now, yes, I did. because I tried to do that make a mask out of a bra challenge thing and it just didn't work. But you've lost even more weight since then, so maybe the bras now would work.
Great. So today is an underwear-free chat zone, safe to say?
Yeah.
Underwear-free chat zone?
Oh, no, so underwear and well,
on your
that
face.
That could make it interesting. Yeah.
Now, that was about 12 months ago.
Larry's first, it's okay.
Just keep the shot just below the chin. We're fine, Kelly, with that. Now, that was about 12 months ago at the height of lockdown. You've since revealed at the end of lockdown in LA, you had a nervous breakdown. Talk us through this. Why do you think that happened? It was very anxious, nervous time for everyone, right?
So I was being joking when I used the term nervous breakdown, and the media turned it into something a lot bigger than that. That was not the case. I got too happy and thought that I was fixed and thought that I could drink like a normal person. So I had a drink, and for the first 2 days it worked. And I drank one drink or two drinks and it was fine. And then about 3 days into it, I was drinking bottles and couldn't stop myself and was right back where I started when I finished drinking and quickly snap myself out of it, because I did not work this hard to fix all these problems just to throw myself back into it.
Would you call it a relapse? Is that?
Of course, yeah, full-blown relapse.
A full-blown relapse. So what is it that you're able to snap your fingers and get out of that? Because that's a really terrific thing you're able to do.
I think the longer that you are in recovery and the more that you want this and the more that you realize how much life is really worth living, and my addiction and my problem makes where I'm most comfortable is alone and drunk, feeling sorry for myself. And that is not a life to live by any means. It's not a life that I want. So I didn't spend 3-4 years getting everything back on track and finally becoming a whole human that didn't have like issues of any kind, because I was in full recovery and all my dreams of what come true. I sold 3 TV shows during the pandemic and they're all in pre-production, and I don't want to blow that because I can't keep it together. It's not worth it.
Wow. Kelly, you posted about your relapse on Instagram. You knew that would lead to a tidal wave of mainly support, I suppose. Why did you decide to go public with that so publicly? And how helpful was everyone piling on going, we've got your back, stay strong, stay positive, all that sort of behaviour?
Okay, so it's weird. I was met with two sides when I came out publicly. Some people thought that I was doing it for attention, which I was like, no, you don't get it. I was doing it so that I can be held accountable, so that I need that in order to stay sober. That's part of how my recovery works. And I knew that if I didn't come clean, I could have kept going for so long until I got myself into a place that I couldn't get out. And that's why it was so important to me, because once everybody knew, I had to do something about it.
That's great. This is the first topic that you cover on your new podcast. Now, this is with the life coach who first intervened when you were younger, right? So what's something maybe that we don't realise about that time in your life from back then?
Okay, I almost swore. I was a nightmare. I actually called the police on him to get him out of my house, because I had been intervened so many times that I knew my legal rights in intervention. Like, I was horrible, like horrible. He said it took him like a week to cut. He had like an emotional hangover. I literally abused him, but I wear the badge proudly that I was one of his top five most difficult interventions. And let me tell you, he's had guns pulled on him. So
wow.
I was like, it just makes me feel proud of myself that I came full circle, and now him and I are friends, and I'm not a mess anymore. I almost fell back into it, but it's not where I want to be. No one likes the drunk chick.
No. Well, we're proud of you too for not pulling a gun on him as well. Now we got to go back.
I don't have a gun.
We got to go back even further, right? We actually found an appearance you made on Joan Rivers' talk show. You were just 6 years old. Look at you taking center stage. How adorable.
The funniest thing about that video, if you continue watching it, all I do is yawn and scratch my crotch throughout the entire thing. And I watched it and I was like, oh my God. And then all those years later, she ended up my mentor and one of the best things that ever happened to me. Every single day that I got to spend with her is something that I cherish and hold so dear to my heart. She was the most incredible woman I've ever met in my life.
She is missed, that is for sure. Your podcast, Kelly, it's also a vodcast, so people can tune in. So what else can we expect on the show?
So, okay, the next episode after the first one, which was about drug addiction and relapse and addiction in general, the one after that is about weight loss and the surgery that Jeff and I both had, the gastric sleeve. And then we're going to slip into some more entertainment. And I don't have TikTok. I've not been on TikTok. So we're going to get a couple of our friends who are really big TikTok stars. I'm not going to say who, but maybe one of them is named Bryce. Maybe one is not. We're not sure yet. And he is going to teach me some TikTok dances. And I'm finally going to launch a TikTok page. And it'll be funny because I've been so defiant in not having one.
Yeah.
But now, like, secretly, I really want one.
Yeah. Now, as we say goodbye, we wanted to show you Kourtney Kardashian's new look. Now, she's gone purple too via a filter.
Really?
Are you on? This is really catching on, this this thing you're doing.
Oh, that's awesome. She looks rad.
Hers is just a filter. I think yours is more long-term by the look of it. Kelly, we love catching...
Oh, yeah, I'm a commitment girl.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to do something, you go the full 110%. So great to see you again, Kelly.
Can I just say good morning, Melinda Varga? I miss you so much. I love you.
Oh,
thank you.
She's an Aussie.
Sorry. Yeah, but you know the nanny from the Osbournes who's still like my best friend. Yeah, so Melinda, I have to say hi.
Oh, and thank you for allowing the viewers who sit at home and watch this show yawning and scratching their crotch to make them feel better about themselves. We appreciate that. Always good fun, Kelly. Thank you.
Yes, it's behaviour we encourage.
Thank you so much.
You can stream the Kelly Osbourne and Jeff Beecher Show, a podcast and a vodcast, today.
We never ever like to play favourites with our guests here on The Morning Show, and we always say that just before we introduce one of our favourites. But we do love us some Dannii Minogue, from Young Talent Time to Home and Away, and those hit singles of the 90s and noughties. Dannii has become part of the fabric of Australian pop culture for sure.
Yeah, you've only just scratched the surface here, lads, because Dannii's hosted TV shows, models, and even runs her own fashion label. But this week, she's putting all of her focus onto arguably one of the most important dates of the year by adding a little sparkle to Mother's Day, a little Minogue magic. Dannii Minogue joins us live from our Melbourne studio. Hi, Dannii.
Good morning. Cheers.
Hi.
I don't have a glass in my hand yet, but cheers.
It's all right. We've got plenty over here.
Yeah, just offset. Too long since we've spoken to you, but we've seen a lot of you lately because the 50th anniversary of Young Talent Time. Gee, it's been fun seeing all that old vision.
It's so good to reconnect with friends as well. Like, some of us are really tight and we keep in contact, but then just sort of people have changed numbers and stuff, and really, like, okay, here's my number, we're all back together again. And it's so nice to honor Johnny Young and all the good moments of television. You forget that started, I think the first episode was still black and white. I wasn't in it then, though.
Yeah. It was a fantastic show. There have been a lot of old clips resurfacing.
Mum and Dad are in a couple of those old clips, and I think they wish they could destroy them because, as you know, they're not comfortable on camera at all.
Yeah, right.
But isn't that funny that we're talking about fashion and that's you've ended up sort of in that space as well? Like, it's funny how your dreams actually come true.
There are a couple of clips that I've found lately because, you know, me turning 50 this year with Young Talent Time, with going through stuff, where I say I'd like to be a fashion designer and be on TV, and they're the two things
look
that I do, and that's me at, like, 17 saying that. So, yeah, I'm living the dream, as they say.
So, Dannii, here's the thing. We look at these and all our audience looks at it and goes, that is so, so adorable. But we love to ask people like you, looking back at clips like this, do you think they're adorable or a bit cringy for you?
I love the cringe factor. Like, it makes my palms go sweaty, but the more videos, the better. And Kylie's always, if she finds something, she'll send it to me and go, oh, God, this brings back so many good memories.
So,
yeah, if someone posts something, she'll be first to send it to me.
It's the fringe that really dates things, isn't it? It's the fringe.
I think that I'm responsible for part of the ozone layer not being there because I remember the cans of hairspray were like the super-duper-duper big ones and they were lacquer. Anyone who's my age will know that it was all about lacquer. So once you teased it up, it just stayed there all day.
Well, we expect to see you and Kylie Gillies in front of The Hague for damage to the ozone layer with hairspray.
100%.
Guilty.
So Young Talent Time, you were just little, like younger than Ethan is now. Ethan's 10.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you look at Ethan and go, wow, I just can't imagine him doing something like that?
I can't, just because of his personality type. Like, he loves singing and dancing, won't do it in front of anyone but me. So on the way to school, if you buy, you know, next to us in a car, we are rapping, we're doing dance moves. It's very embarrassing. But, yeah, he loves music and movement, but I think you have to be that kind of person that wants to be under the spotlight to actually do it.
Oh, you'll drag it out of him for sure. sticking with family, we're here doing something really special for Mother's Day. This is great stuff. Tell us about the partnership with Yellow Glen.
Yellow Glen is turning 50. I'm turning 50. I mean, it's a real heritage brand for Australia. So many people have had milestone moments, like I'm celebrating this year with my birthday in Yellow Glen. To pop a bottle, oh, gosh, there's footage of me on set. I have popped so many bottles in my dressing room in Channel 7. If you go in the ones and you see, like, the dent in the ceiling, they were my dressing rooms.
Right.
But as we're filming, you know, you put something in front of a camera and it's bound to not work. The ones that we shook up took ages to pop, and then ones that weren't shook up just blew off in my hand. So it was a lot of fun.
Love it. The Minogues are setting up a bit of a wine empire. Kylie's got her own collection too. She's got the rosé, I think.
Yes. Yeah, we're very lucky to be guinea pigs at home. She's like, here's a new part of the collection. This isn't out yet. And we've been having a lot of fun with that. And she said to me, you know, yesterday, she's like, have fun with Yellow Glen. I mean, it's a great business to be in. She knows that I'll be popping a bottle on Sunday for Mother's Day. We've got all the generations together in Australia. So my grandma, who's turned 101, mum, myself and Kylie. So I think after COVID and being separated, you can't miss any celebration. I don't want anything to pass without really being together.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful to have all the generations in one room and free alcohol. It's perfect.
Collective noun is called a glitter of Minogue.
Yes, that's right.
What it is.
That's right.
It's a dangerous yet delicious combination.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. It's really great to see you, Danny.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys. Danny. Take it easy. We'll see you soon. Well, 2021 is shaping up to be a pretty busy year for Brandon Jenner and his family. There's the end of the hit reality show that put them on the map, Caitlin's unexpected move into politics, and of course, raising young kids.
But Brandon's not letting the spotlight distract him from his real creative passion, and that is, of course, music, releasing a brand new track, which has been inspired by an emotional, true story. And Brandon Jenner joins us live now from Los Angeles. Good to see you again.
Good to see you guys. Thanks for showing some of that.
Well, congrats on the track, Life for Two. I mean, this is a bit of a darker subject matter than we're used to hearing from you.
Well, I tend to write songs about some pretty traumatic things that go on in humanity. It's a consistent theme of mine. I'd like to try to tap into emotions that people are going through in the world and write a song about it in hopes that it will heal people that are going through similar types of things. So, you know, this was a song. Should I share the story? I'll make it very quick.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So after a show, there was a woman that came up to me and said that she had been diagnosed with a very bad illness and that she wasn't going to be around for in a few years. She was going to be departing this world, and she was leaving behind a couple of young kids. And she wanted me, being her favorite songwriter, which was very humbling, to write a song about her experience. And so I started writing it immediately and basically wrote a letter from her perspective as best as I could to her kids about what is important in life and what kind of role she will have for them as they move forward.
Oh, what a beautiful yeah. story behind that. Okay, not just your music keeping you busy. You got the three kids, including your twin boys, Sam and Beau, and they turned one this year. You got a house full of happiness, but a busy household, right? Mm-hmm.
I do. Yeah. I mean, family is the most important thing for me. I kind of have three big pillars in my life, which are family, and that's being a dad and a husband. And then music is a very important foundation for me. And then self-care, you know, just trying to stay healthy, eat right. We grow a lot of food here at our house. So we're eating right out of the garden, trying to exercise and then do some things that are fun, like get out and go surfing occasionally and stuff. So between those three things, I do keep myself very busy.
Yeah, we've got to ask about a vlog that you filmed recently. You took Caitlin flying in your own plane for the first time. I mean, this is a hobby you two have in common.
That's true, yeah. When I was in college, I started taking lessons, and I've been flying now for, I think, 19 years or something. And I got a bunch of ratings, my helicopter commercial license and stuff, just for fun. It's a hobby. And it was really inspired by going up with my dad when I was really young and a kid, sitting on her lap and taking the yoke and just trying to keep it straight and level. So to be able to, you know, come full circle and take her up in this little plane that I found and bought recently, I became a plane owner, which is so cool. And it really meant a lot to the both of us to be able to kind of get out and see how the world just continues to move on. And hopefully I can carry that torch onto my kids as well.
Oh, how fun. Now, Caitlin is keeping busy now going into politics, running for LA governor. Now, there was a report, we've got to talk to you about it, that you and your brothers weren't happy with this career change. Is that true?
Was there a report? I don't know. I keep my head out of the news as much as I can. And she's technically running for California governor, which is the fifth largest economy in the world. This is a big deal, not LA governor.
I beg your pardon. So a couple of things
I got
wrong in that question.
So
let me just scrap that question. How do you feel about all that?
That's a good question. Clearly, it will put a lot of attention on myself and our family. You know, I support anybody's decision to run a campaign and try to make a case for why they should be elected to office. You know, my dad and I have talked about politics a lot over the years, and, you know, we definitely see the world differently in some ways. But, you know, she has every right to go out there and make her case and hopefully gain the support that she needs and that she's looking for. So, you know, it's very early. There's a long way to go. But the fact that it's my parent really carries no weight with me. It's all about policy at the end of the day. So you know, that's how I'm going to weigh my decision on, you know, how I decide to put my support and my vote behind. But, you know, I'm eternally proud of her and who she is and all the things that she's accomplished and continues to accomplish as a parent, for sure.
Okay. The final episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians just around the corner. I mean, you were in some of the earlier episodes. How are you feeling about the end of that era?
Wow. This is the first news I've heard about it, to be honest, from you guys. So I didn't even know that was happening. In your little reel before I was on, you said that my roots were in reality TV, but really that's not the case. I've been playing music ever since I was very young. My stepdad is a music producer, and I used to just hang out in the studio as a young kid and watch. So reality TV has kind of infiltrated my life rather than that being the foundation for what it is that I do. So, you know, we did a show a long time ago called The Princess of Malibu with my brother and I, that was sold up to Fox a long time ago. Mm. My sisters did a reality show, my other sisters, not just the Kardashians, but the Foster Girls. Yeah. So, you know, reality TV is just kind of, it's a part of being in my family in LA. And I have shown up and done some appearances on some of those shows. But for the most part, I just keep my head down, focus on the music, because that's the thing that really makes my soul happy.
All right. Well, Brandon, thank you for politely correcting all the mistakes that I made in that interview. And
it was just one.
No, well, it was just a couple.
We can keep going. We'll
thing.
See if
there was a reality TV up. Thing. There was, you know. But listen, always lovely to chat to you. And I promise you, I'll get it all right next time. Guaranteed.
Okay, sounds good.
You're going to have to write another song for us. You can stream Brandon's new track. It's called Life for Two. And isn't that just a magic and beautiful story behind the track? Brandon's song is out now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, Nikki Exotica has spent more than $1 million on the way she looks. From head to toe, the recording artist is aiming for plastic perfection. And despite what the critics may say, Nikki says she is proud of her appearance.
With more procedures than she can count already out of the way, including gender reassignment surgery, Nikki's path to reclaiming her identity has led to social media stardom. Now, with the support of her legion of fans online, she's inspiring others to embrace being different. Let's say hi, Nikki Exotica, live from LA. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, good. Oh, we got so much to talk about. Let's go back to your childhood. You say you always knew you were different, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was childhood like?
Childhood was hard, you know. I was hiding it from my family that I wanted to be different, and I just kept putting on like makeup and painting my nails and going to school. I was getting bullied. I was putting makeup on in homeroom class, and it was difficult. You know, I didn't understand myself. I grew up in New Jersey by the Jersey Shore.
Okay, but you've described your transition as one of the best things that you have ever done. So how did the initial surgeries inspire your look today? Were you hooked from day one?
No, I mean, actually my first nose job, it was so painful, and I said, I'll never get another surgery procedure ever again. And then after that, I don't know, I just kept on going and I couldn't stop.
So that was your first step in the million-dollar Barbie journey, right? What makes you different to other plastic surgery stars?
I have done very, innovative procedures that others have not. I was probably one of the first people to do calf implants at the time, back in 1995, 96. It was around there. And then I did just recently my eye color change procedure. So I've been doing my lasering my eye color from brown to blue. And let's see what else. I did my voice change surgery before a lot of people have even heard about it. So, yeah, I've done a lot of stuff.
Nikki, can we just talk about the eye colour? I thought you must have had a filter on your camera. That's not... Oh,
So these are contact lenses until my eyes get light enough. So my eyes are like very gray-brown right now, but they're going to be blue. Yeah, it takes sessions. So I'm at 16 sessions right now, and it takes about 30 sessions to get to blue. So I'm still doing it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. This is such a – this is devotion. This is devotion to a way you want to look.
Dedicated.
Wow. And not cheap. We understand you've spent $1 million or more. That's a lot of money. Do you ever think where else you could have spent that money? Or is that always
yells at me. My mom yells at me all the time. She's like, you know, you could have bought a car, a beautiful car, a home, a mansion, everything, you know. And I'm just like, okay, but I'm happy, you know.
Well, that's if it's bringing happiness, I guess that's what it's all about, right? Tell us about this pet that you have. It's an F1 Savannah cat.
Yes.
I mean, it's not right with you right now. We've got the photos, though. So it's half a serval, which is a wild cat from Africa. Wow.
Yes. His dad is a serval and the mother is a Bengal. That's my baby. I've had him since 2004. And I have another cat, a Bengal cat, which is part Asian leopard cat, but he's adorable. He's very mean and aggressive to other people. So when, like, everybody saw the video from Hooked on the Look and he was getting really nasty and growling, it was because the camera crew was there. He wouldn't really do that.
Oh, okay. Right.
And these are really expensive, these cats, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, I included him in the price. No, but he was about $15,000 at the time when I got him.
Wow.
So over $1 million, that's where you're up to now. When will you be done? Or are we going to have you back as the $2 million Barbie?
No. I don't know. I think I'm at a little bit over $1 million right now. I think I'm redoing my teeth because I had braces on the bottom. So I'm doing my bottom veneers and then redoing the top to match the bottom, because you can't just do the bottom if you went to another doctor to do your top, so you got to redo the whole mouth, and that's going to cost a lot. And then I'm probably doing butt implants because I had silicone removal surgery. And I do want to talk to people about silicone injections, is that although I was a supporter of silicone injections, it is so bad for you, and I would say to stay against it because it's toxic.
Yeah.
That's why I removed it.
Hey, Nikki, we really got to go, but lots of our viewers will be wondering what you do for work. How are you raising these funds to do all this stuff?
Well, I am a pop music artist, so I travel the United States and the world. I perform in many different countries. I perform in Mykonos and Barcelona. I have some of my music videos up online on my YouTube channel.
Great.
And I also act. I'm a model, influencer. I make money in many different ways, and I'm writing a book right now. So.
Oh, you got lots going on. We can't wait to see the book. Yes. Come back and talk to us about that. Great to talk to you today, Nikki. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, in a normal year, Australians spend a whopping $1 billion on cosmetic treatments. That's non-surgical procedures, things like dermal fillers, anti-wrinkle injections. The boom is attributed to lower costs, minimal downtime, and more social acceptance of the treatments.
But is the risk always worth the reward? Radio host Sammy Lucas is getting candid about cosmetic procedures and why you should think twice before going under the needle.
And Sammy Lucas joins us. Hello.
Morning.
I think it's a personal subject, but important to talk about, right? Let's go back to the beginning. So what happened?
Well, let me just say, look, it is a little embarrassing to talk about, and when you see the photos of what happened to me, you'll understand why. But I just think this happened to me. I can't change it. And if you've ever had or considered any kind of cosmetic procedure, I just want to share my story as a timely reminder that none of these procedures are entirely risk-free. Mm. And my issue here, Larry and Kylie, is that we're only just learning about some of the long-term effects of some of these minimally invasive procedures. Ooh. And I was kind of a human guinea pig for that. So, I started getting dermal filler like 15 years ago because I grew up with sunken eyes. You know when you have the under eye hollows? I think we've got some old pics here. And it was one of those things that it didn't matter how much sleep I got, how much money I spent on expensive eye creams, I always looked tired because of these under eye hollows. And so it was always something that annoyed me. And then in 2006, I heard about this non-invasive procedure, mm-hmm. dermal filler injections, where they inject hyaluronic acid under the skin, and it fills out the hollows and cleans out wrinkles a little bit. And this was me just after I'd had my dermal filler injections. It's, you know, minimally invasive, it's non-surgical, it's relatively pain-free, relatively inexpensive. I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And the results were immediate, and it was like the under eye hollows disappeared magically, and I thought, I'm hooked.
Okay, so far this is a giant ad. So
it worked beautifully.
But this is a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
So that was 2006. What went wrong?
Well, what happens with filler is it's designed to naturally dissolve into the body, so you need to go and get refresh jabs every 6 to 18 months. I could somehow manage to go 2 to 3 years between injections, so I would get my refills. The last injection I had was 2016, so more than 4 years ago. End of last year, out of the blue, I was at the movies on a Friday night and this massive lump popped up under my eye, out of nowhere. And I went to the doctor, no one could tell me what it was. For 5 months, I had this business going on where I had lumps under both eyes, swelling, bruising. I'm sharing these disgusting photos, thinking of maybe putting that one on my dating profile.
Well, they're not disgusting.
Well, they are embarrassing. Look, it was the pain as well, Kylie. So it looked
awful. Overnight
this happened, and it took 5 months. Look at this. I could barely leave the house, but it was also the pain. There was excruciating pain under my skin, headaches.
And how'd you resolve it in the end? Because you were going to lots of different doctors and specialists and trying to work it out.
No one could tell me what it was. Yeah, it took 5 months of
which
x-rays.
Which is frightening on its own. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Wondering if I'm going to look like that forever. No one could attribute it to dermal filler because it had been 4 years since my last injections. Anyway, I ended up at an aesthetic oculoplastic surgeon, Dr. Angelo Serbus, who identified it as a delayed reaction to dermal filler because I'd had a bad viral illness. And this is the thing they're only just discovering about dermal filler.
Wow.
Years later, even if it's years after your last injection, if you have a viral illness or an autoimmune issue, it's like this bad reaction that happens to leftover filler particles.
Because we didn't know this 15 years ago.
We didn't know. And the doctor I saw said it's quite rare, but he sees a few cases a month now. He saw one woman who had this reaction 10 years after her last dermal filler injection.
Oh, so what was the solution? How did you fix it?
You can fix it. It's either surgical is worst case to remove the filler particles, or you can have these micro-hyalize injections. I've had two treatments of those that dissolve away the filler particles, and I may need one or two more treatments of that to fully get rid of it.
And no more filler ever?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So what's your advice? Because this has gained an incredible new popularity during COVID, right? People are leaning on this stuff and looking to it. What do you say to them?
I'm not putting anyone off having any cosmetic treatments because I think it's a personal thing. And I know for me, it was such a subtle difference to my appearance, but it made such a big difference to my self-esteem and my self-confidence. So I'm not telling anyone that cosmetic procedures are bad. I just think you really, really need to be prepared that we are still learning about some of the long-term effects of some of these treatments, and no cosmetic procedure is risk-free.
And if you hadn't have got sick, you may never have had this reaction, but you just never know what's around the corner,
who knows?
Right?
This time it was a viral illness. Who knows what it could be next?
Speaking of bags under your eyes.
I've got new bags now.
You've got new bags. You're waking up at 3 a.m. for a little bit of a radio gig at the moment. You're doing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm doing a little fill-in gig on Wave FM, which is down in the Illawarra in Wollongong. And my co-host is the gorgeous Damien Leith.
Oh, wow.
He is amazing.
Does
radio
he sing
talent.
To you in the morning?
He does. He serenades me every day.
Fabulous.
So I first met Damien in about 2006 when he won Australian Idol. And look, that was us last week having lunch. He is such a charming, beautiful guy. There's the before and afters. That's 2006 and 2021.
See, Kylie, the co-host that takes her co-host to lunch. I like the sound of that. Good on you, Sammy.
Thanks, guys.
Setting the pace for all co-hosts around Australia.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story.
I'm happy to.
Yeah, fascinating.
Who paid for lunch?
The station, the radio station.
Fair.
We're screwed.
Thanks, Sammy. Good to see you.
Well, welcoming a child is an exciting time, of course, for every parent. But between time off work and buying cots, prams and nappies, the cost of bringing home Bub can also be daunting for many Australian families.
Absolutely. For eligible mums and dads, there is help available, from parental leave to partner payments. But how much could you actually be entitled to, and when should you start applying to get the financial support you need?
For more, we're joined by General Manager of Services Australia, Hank Jongden, live from Canberra. Hi, Hank.
Morning, Hank. G'day. How are you?
We're great. So we get the exciting news we're expecting. Not you and me.
Like, congratulations.
People get the exciting news they're expecting. How do they find out if they are eligible for parental leave from Centrelink, Hank?
Well, of course, the first thing to say is you need to be the primary carer to qualify for the leave. There is an income threshold. You need to have earned less than $150,000 a year in the period leading up to the birth of the child. You also need to have worked for at least 10 months of the preceding 13 months. But the good news is, with the pandemic, if you receive JobKeeper, it's counted as work.
Okay. Hank, if we are eligible, how much parental leave can you get?
It's set at the national wage threshold, which is $750 per week before tax.
And how long do we get that for?
A total of 18 weeks. And in the case of dad and partner pay, that's paid same rate for a period of 2 weeks.
Okay. When can we take this leave? Do we need to do it from the day the child is born? Can it be postponed?
Well, look, the system is really flexible, actually. At the time that you claim and you nominate a date from which you would like payments to commence. And the great news is you don't need to take the full block of leave in one block. You can actually delay part of it, and you can delay it for as long as 2 years following the anniversary of the birth or adoption of a child.
Carry on.
Oh, look, and my advice is claim early and claim online, because it is a very straightforward system.
You just touched on partner payments. Just give us a broader view. What can they apply for, actually? Partners.
Well, actually, it's dad and partner pay.
Okay.
As I said, it's paid at the same rate. It's a total of 2 weeks. You can decide when you want to take it, as long as it's within 52 weeks of the birth or adoption of a child.
Okay. So say we're given paid parental leave by our workplace. Can we use that as well as the Centrelink payments? I think that's a double dipping question.
It's not actually, yeah, look, that's the beauty of the system. It's not actually double dipping. Under the rules, you can receive the parental leave at the same time as any paid or unpaid leave. And look, what we encourage you to do, of course, is talk to your employer, because it's your employer that will actually make the payments on our behalf.
Okay, now we know you and yours have been working really hard to make all these processes very simple and easy to access. Talk us through the process of applying for parental leave then.
Well, as I said before, look, claim early, claim online. It's the most straightforward way. But the really important thing here is talk to your employer. We encourage people to talk to their employer up to 10 weeks prior to the birth of a child.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that. As I said, the employer is the person that will be making payments on our behalf, which means that your payments are made as part of your normal cycle. They're also in a position to understand your tax situation, and you can negotiate your leave with them. So that's the first step we'd encourage you to do. Now, we will also, as part of the claim process, ask you for some documents. Things like tax file number, Medicare numbers, those sorts of things.
And a birth certificate, I guess.
To square all that away.
And a birth certificate would be probably pretty handy. Do they need to supply?
Yes. And look, the great thing is, again, hospitals are pretty streamlined with all of this. Most parents will get what's called a parenting pack. That gives you everything you need to confirm the birth of a child. And what it means is, if you've already claimed, it's a very straightforward process at a very busy time, let's face it.
Right. Is there any help available outside of parental leave?
Oh, yes, there is. Look, the most well-known payment, of course, is family tax benefit. It's usually, depending on your circumstances, it's usually paid in two parts, family tax A and B. That depends on the number and age of children, as well as your income, of course. And then the other big payment for working parents in particular, and students, is childcare subsidy, and that helps offset the cost of childcare.
Okay, Hank, thank you so much. Just quickly, lots of people through the pandemic getting fur babies, dogs, cats, the like. Any help available? That dog food is quite expensive.
I wish there was.
No.
I think I've got the most expensive dog in the history of the universe right now.
All right, Hank, lovely to talk to you. And congratulations to you and Kylie on expecting your first child together. Good to chat.
I'm thrilled.
Yes.
I'm really thrilled.
Yes. Good luck, you two.
Well, it always makes us pretty proud, doesn't it, to see an Aussie making it in the US. And for the past decade, Robin Lawley has been doing just that, sitting at the top of her game in the modelling world.
While she has never been afraid to share her beauty for the world to see, there was one thing she'd been hiding, and that's her battle with epilepsy. Robin had suffered with seizures for many years, but has only recently decided to share the full story on her new podcast.
We welcome Robin Lawley live from New York. Wonderful to see you again, Robin.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I miss Australia.
Oh, so yeah. Good to see you. Tell us about your decision to go public with the fact that you have epilepsy. Why now?
Well, you know, after doing my epic podcast and hearing all the survivors and just hearing their stories, I felt now is the time to just be honest. I'm sick of this dishonesty. And Ryan O'Connell had such a story to tell, and he had been keeping his disability in the disability closet, as he told it. And I kind of was feeling the same way. I was sick of hiding it, and I felt, why should I? I shouldn't feel ashamed of my epilepsy. And other people felt the same way. And I love when I hear people share their epileptic stories, and epilepsy isn't something I should feel ashamed of. And so, yeah, I feel like that 11-year-old hearing my story is going to feel so much more reassurance when they hear my story. Because, yeah, you feel, I don't know, you feel that sense of, I don't know, you can comradeship when you hear others.
Well, you're not on your own, right? You were actually scheduled to be on our show a couple of weeks ago, but you suffered a seizure. Talk us through what happened then and how are you now?
Yeah, unfortunately, I did. I suffered a seizure. I don't use that excuse often, and I hadn't had a seizure in 6 months' time, and so I was really, you know, you never like waking up from a seizure, and I unfortunately did and woke up in a hospital, and, you know, I had to listen to, once again, my podcast to rally me out of that hospital bed, because as any epileptic does, when you do especially go to hospital, you've had a really bad seizure. Because, you know, usually when you've had a seizure, you can just, you know, comfort yourself and you can get through them. But the times that you've had to go to hospital, it's not a good feeling. And so, yeah, it's one of those unfortunate things. And you have to rest. And like I said, I used my own Audible podcast to get me through that. I used Turiya Pitt's story. I used Lucy Bloom's story, because when you've gone through these near-death experiences, you have to use those motivational speakers. You have to use those stories to get you through those moments.
Yeah, whatever it takes. You've admitted to being scared about losing jobs because you say the fashion industry is notoriously judgy. What's the response been like since opening up and talking about your epilepsy? Have you lost any work that you're aware of?
Yeah, I have. They're notoriously judgy and they judge. You know, I've had people message me going, why are you sharing this? Are you stupid? You know, why are you doing this? Like, you know, they're going to judge you. They're going to, you know. And, you know, I look back in time and I look back through history and people, you know, I think change doesn't come easy, you know, and I think you have to put your foot down, you know, and I think you have to make a stance. And like I said, I'm not ashamed of my epilepsy. It's something I couldn't control. It's something that's come from a stroke. And The stroke came from lupus, and something I've put into remission is lupus. And I did that through a plant-based diet, something that's incredible. So if I can stop women and men from getting lupus and sharing that information, I will. And that is an incredible feat for me. So okay. I'm trying to share that information to stop strokes from stopping from my generation, because I'm a 31-year-old woman, and that's a young age for a person to have a stroke. So I think the sharing information is something I can do to stop and prevent and save lives, and I will.
Robin, we've got to say goodbye, but just before we go, you say you want to dispel the myths around epilepsy. So the stage is yours as we say goodbye. What would you like our viewers to know?
Epilepsy is actually really quite common, more common than you think, and it can happen to absolutely anyone of any age, and it can happen to you. So don't judge it before you know it. And, you know, be healthy and, you know, try to prevent epilepsy. And it can, yeah, like I said, it can happen to absolutely anyone. And yeah.
Very well said. Robin, always lovely to catch up with you. And glad to hear you're doing really well. Your podcast is called Everybody, and it's available now for people to find out. Audible Original Everybody with Robin Lawley. Thank you, Robin.
No worries. I'm so grateful to be here and so grateful to be alive. And, you know, thank you so much for having me, guys.
Always lovely to see you, Robin. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, Australian swimming superstar Bronte Campbell may be gearing up to compete at the Tokyo Olympics, but it's not the only sporting event keeping her busy. The gold medal winner is throwing her support behind Special Olympics Australia, an organisation that provides sporting opportunities for those with intellectual disabilities.
Now, it's a cause close to Bronte's heart. Her younger brother Hamish lives with cerebral palsy and requires around-the-clock care. There are currently more than 7,000 Special Olympics Australia participants playing 17 sports right across the country. And Bronte Campbell joins us live from Brisbane this morning. Hi, Bronte.
Hello.
First up, how's the prep going for Tokyo? The trials start in just over a month. How are you feeling?
Good. It's all coming around really quickly. So we had that weird time when it all got cancelled, seemed the Olympics were so far away, and now suddenly it's right on our doorstep. So it's all gearing up now. I'm really, really excited about it.
We feel lucky to get you in the studio because this close to the Olympics, you must be training like 28 hours a day, yeah?
Yeah, if there were 28 hours in a day, that is what I'd be doing. But you've got me in between training, morning and night training, so I was lucky I got to nip into the studios up here in Brizzy.
Yeah, I suspect this is usually your sleep time, is it?
You've talked to a lot of swimmers if you know that it's our nap time. But yes, this is normally my nap time, so I am giving up my nap. But I'm aware that I'm a pretty privileged person because napping is part of my job. So.
Yeah, that's great. The Australian Olympic Committee has secured vaccines for all the athletes headed to Tokyo, the first dose coming next week. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a bit of a relief to know that we're going to be able to get vaccines going over, because we don't really know what we're going into and what the Olympics are going to look like. So that's really good. And I think the biggest thing for us is knowing that we're not actually displacing anyone from the queue. That was something I didn't really want to do, but I'm glad that they've managed to make the vaccines available and knowing that we're not actually taking them from anyone that needs them.
Yeah,
so the first one will be next week.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about this fantastic project, your work with Special Olympics Australia. It's great stuff. Your brother Hamish, as Kylie mentioned, has cerebral palsy. How has participation in sports helped him?
So my brother, him getting out into the community and seeing what that does for him, he goes and does sailing, he goes and does swimming, he goes to City Hall and listens to the concerts. Seeing how that enriches his life is something that I feel very privileged to be on the front seat of that, and I'm so passionate about what sport can do. It's this unifying thing. It brings the community together and it promotes inclusion in ways that other things just can't. So to be partnering with IGA and Special Olympics and pushing forward this great cause of community and just knowing that makes an actual difference in people's lives. It's not just words on a page, and it brings so much joy, not only to the person involved, but everyone else. So it's not just people with an intellectual disability who this is benefiting. It's everyone that gets to see that and the joy that they bring to that environment. So it's something that's really close to my heart.
Yeah, of course. And Special Olympics Australia, they're holding a fundraiser at the moment because these programs, they take money, you know, to run them. How can people get involved in this fundraiser, Bronte?
So fundraise is really easy. All you need to do is do your normal grocery shop. Just make sure you head into IGA and buy anything that's got a community chest ticket on it. It's just a little blue ticket. And money from that goes to Special Olympics Australia, and that helps them run these programs and get people with an intellectual disability participating in sport.
Oh, great
That's
stuff.
Combining one of my favourite activities in sports, shopping, Bronte. So.
You can buy chocolate and support sport. Like, wow. When else can you do that? That's great.
Fantastic.
Hey, there are tight restrictions around the Tokyo Olympics this year. You have the rare opportunity in that you could be going with your sister Kate. That must be very important to have that network around you at a big event like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important. Obviously, going over, we've got a long time over there. We've got a two-week lead-in period. We're probably going to have to quarantine on the way home, or definitely quarantining on the way home. I'm not actually sure whether it's a bonus being locked in a hotel room with your sister or not. I'll let you know how that ends up going.
We'll check in with you on day four onwards.
Yeah, please. I mean, maybe check on me up to day four and after that.
Yeah, okay.
After that, I may not be worth talking to.
we love hearing about everything that you're doing. Thank you so much, Bronte, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And good luck
Thanks,
for the trials.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Well, when it comes to getting fired, even celebrities aren't immune to a dramatic dismissal. Ryan Gosling was let go from The Lovely Bones because he gained too much weight. Jenny Slate only lasted one season on Saturday Night Live after accidentally swearing live on air, while Megan Fox was terminated from the Transformers franchise when she trash-talked the movie's director in an interview.
Now, away from Hollywood, it's safe to say most employees at least try to remain professional. But did you know there's a long list of workplace breaches that could send you packing prematurely? From how you dress to oversharing on social media. Today, we're revealing the surprising things you never knew could cost you your job.
Lawyer and legal analyst Michael Kozilny joins us with more. Hi, Michael. Employees can be in the firing line for a variety of reasons. Let's walk through some of the more quirky rules, starting with how you dress.
Well, that's right. You can actually get the sack for not dressing appropriately. Imagine, for example, if you had a part-time job as a work in a bar where lots of ladies go, and they told you to wear a jock strap and a tie, a leather tie, and if you refuse to follow that policy, you can get the sack for that. So some places you've got to dress provocatively. And others, for example, the ATO changed their policy a few years ago, saying that the ladies can't dress too provocatively because it doesn't fit with their public image. So whatever dress code is appropriate to that type of employment.
So can we just go back to me in a leather thong and a tie here at this job? You mean my
no,
other job?
Your moonlighting job.
Oh, the other job, that's okay.
Scenario.
If that was a requirement
of the job, according to the ATO guidelines.
And under no circumstances.
Well, the ATO is another story, but if that place advertised and said, look, there's lots of hen's nights here, and we want you to stand at the door and you know, look like a manpower man to meet these ladies, and you turn up in a suit, they'd say, listen, we've warned you a few times, and then they could dismiss you from their job.
I think Kylie's thinking, well, that business would go broke pretty quickly with me standing out the front. Now, sharing too much on social media. This is a big trap for so many people.
Indeed.
It can get you in hot water real quick and in a whole lot of trouble. But where do we draw the line?
Well, I think the line is blurred these days because there's lots and lots of cases where people have been disgruntled and they're saying bad things about a former employer. Mm-hmm. A recent case, a student was saying very, very bad things about a former school teacher. A court awarded that school teacher $105,000 in damages. Mm-hmm. So as we know from the defamation laws, the courts are getting much tougher on that.
Yes.
So a lot of workplaces have policies about, they have social media policies, they have policies for all sorts of things, but if we breach those and your employer finds out, there's grounds for instant dismissal.
Okay, what about bad-mouthing your boss or colleagues? maybe even just to your mates over dinner. Mm. How about that?
Yeah,
as opposed to being on social media.
Well, that's right, Kylie. And that sort of falls back into the social media work laws. If that third person, for example, tells the boss, and that's once again a breach of a workplace policy, probably not on first occasion that they would get rid of you, but if there's multiple occasions, it forms part of that policy of their work, and that could warrant a dismissal.
Being drunk at work apparently is also a no-no. Who knew? But what about Friday drinks? What about a social gathering with the team, either in the office space or out at a restaurant somehow? There's also some room to make mistakes here, right? To blurred lines here.
Yeah, both employee and employee must be very, very careful. And we've seen this over the years at Christmas functions, certainly a ground for dismissal and immediate sack. And we've seen it. But what the...
For being drunk?
Being intoxicated.
Right, OK.
Yeah. Because a lot of workplaces have drug and alcohol policies, and so they say, look, we're quite strict on this. Do not get intoxicated if you're associated with this firm. There's always exceptions, though, Kylie. At a recent case at the Opera House, there was a female project manager who got very, very intoxicated at a work party. She then made some sexual remarks towards people and all sorts of grabbing and stuff. She got dismissed for being drunk, but she went to the Fair Work Commission and they found that it was an isolated incident. She had a great work record and they balanced all that, so they reinstated her into her job.
Okay.
So they do look at... The whole picture.
Yeah. Okay. What about dating the boss or dating a co-worker? Lots of companies have very clear policy around this.
Well, a lot of people meet at work because we spend more time at work than we do at home sometimes. And there's no problems with dating somebody, even getting married to somebody. We see it with police people. We see it in the army. And we see it in networks like this. However, if it's not consensual and there's some type of coercion where it might be brought up that if you don't date me, you won't get that job. Or there's a promotion going, why don't we go out for dinner? And if it's if it borders on sexual harassment or coercion, then of course down the track, it could very problematic.
Very quickly, what about lying on your job application? This could be trouble. What about just like a teeny weeny white lie, like I won 2 Walkley Awards for journalism?
Yeah, well,
like
good question.
Lie.
And so many people do it, but the courts are getting so much more serious. 2018, Hertz employed a chap called Tam. Tam said he had done that job for more than 5 years. It found out that he'd only done it for less than 12 months. And they found a whole bunch of strange behaviour. They Google searched this person, and he had about 5 previous claims against other employers. And and he got dismissed because of that incorrect information, and the commission found it was warranted that that we should not lie on resumes.
Sure, and stealing, obviously, that goes without saying.
Yeah, well, that's right. A major theft, obviously, instant dismissal, but even small things.
Stationery cupboard
items. Stationery. It's costing Australia $1.5 billion on these small items. And certainly people think it's just a pen, it's just a staple, it's just this. But employers are sick and tired of it. And and it's usually in a workplace policy. And it's so important that that people don't steal because, 2 or 3 of those minor thefts can get people fired.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Read the fine print. Thank you.
To sum it all up, employers have to give people a fair go, and employees have to do the right thing and follow the rules.
Good stuff, and I swear I'll bring those post-it notes back.
Sounds fair enough.
Good
Thank
to
you,
see
Michael.
You.
Helicopters versus tigers, free range or snow plows?
Are we talking about the last segment?
We're talking about parenting.
Oh,
it can be a minefield of labels, judgment and guilt, but it's the overprotective mums and dads who may be making the biggest mistakes, with some fearing our bubble-wrapped children will lead to a generation of ill-equipped adults.
Teacher, mother of 2 and daughter of a former PM, Daisy Turnbull, is urging parents and carers to take risks with your kids. Her new book is a crucial to-do list designed to build confidence, resilience and independence. And we welcome to The Morning Show author of 50 Risks to Take with Your Kids, Daisy Turnbull. Welcome to you, Daisy. Lovely
Thanks
to see
for
you.
Having me.
Now, as a teacher, what changes have you noticed in parents and kids, let's say over the last decade, for instance?
I think just a lot more involvement, a lot more stepping in when the kids should be doing it for themselves. And I think that a lot of that has come slowly, but now you look back and you think it was nothing like that when I was a kid. So I have a daughter who's still at preschool. We get a daily update in an app about what she's doing every day. Mm. And then I feel bad for the parents because their kids then go to kindy and they get two school reports a year. So I think often in the early years, we're setting them up for this expectation of constant contact, and then they're not getting that when they get to school.
Yeah, then fast forward to high school, then fast forward to uni. It's a, happens so quickly.
My boss actually said to me that she was invited to a parents' evening for her daughter's first year of uni for college. And I was thinking, what? Why? they shouldn't step foot in the college.
You've got a bone to pick with so-called helicopter parents. What is that?
I think helicopter parents are ones who really, everyone really loves their kids, but they step in and do things for the kids and they hover like a helicopter. There's also the lawnmower parent who removes any bumps in the way, and snowplow parents, so many analogies for parents. But I think that it's about doing so much for your kids, often because it's easier to do it for them at that age to step in, but then you're not giving them the opportunity to learn to do it themselves.
Sure. So you want parents to take risks. You want parents to let kids take risks.
Yes.
What are the risks of not taking risks? Where do we end up if we don't let the kids do that?
If we don't let kids take risks and learn to do things as them when they're kids, they'll have heaps of anxiety about doing these things as adults. So if the first time you have an awkward social situation is when you're in your late teens at uni or work and you've never dealt with that before, then you will have a much harder time dealing with that. If the first time you realise you're not good at something is when you're in your 30s, that will be a much more difficult experience to have than discovering when you're 9 or 10.
I'm interested in your upbringing. You know, Dad, Malcolm Turnbull, former Prime Minister, your mum, Mayor of Woollahra. So what's
Sydney,
enough?
Sydney.
City of Sydney. So what upbringing did you have to make you want to take
to do
risk?
This, I would say that I just had a very stereotypical 80s and 90s upbringing. And for me, it was very normal. I don't think my parents were incredibly risky compared to the other parents. My parents were younger than a lot of my school friends' parents. So I think to that end, they were kind of ready to, you know, get messy and have fun and kind of roll around. We did a lot of activities in Centennial Park, the local park near where we live, went to the beach all the time. But I think that I don't think what they did then was shocking. But now when I look back on what I did as a kid and what kids are doing now, it's very different. And I think it was that experience and also having young kids now and realising that's not what we're doing with kids, seeing that difference and then seeing the impact in the high school classroom.
All right, let's drill down a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk physical risks. What sort of physical risks would you like kids to take?
I want more kids climbing trees. And I want more kids playing with sticks.
Old school.
Yeah, old school stuff, which probably for us doesn't sound that risky. But I see parents stopping their kids from doing things. Right. And I also want kids to figure out what they feel comfortable doing and not. Because, you know, you don't want to put your kid on a scooter on the top of a hill and expect them to roll down if they're not comfortable doing it. You want them to measure their own risk capacity.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about character risks. I'm really interested in that too. And I love the perspective that you're a teacher as well.
Oh, thank you.
So sometimes you spend more time with our kids maybe than we spend with them, really. So can you talk about character risks?
I think character is a really important element of a human, obviously. But I think it's something that we need to develop. And it's something that we there's a lot of victimhood that goes on. There's a lot of kind of not taking responsibility and looking at everything that's around them. I think a lot of what we need kids to do is take responsibility, have problem-solving skills, come up with solutions themselves. And that's what this book tries to do. So one of the risks is letting your kid be bored. And actually, when we're bored, that's when we come up with our best ideas. We don't come up with great ideas when we're overstimulated and watching iPads and playing.
So interesting. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much for coming in. We've had your dad on now. You've been on. Let Mum know there's always a spot for him.
Fantastic.
We'll do the family thing. Thank you. Lovely
Thank
to see you.
Daisy Turnbull's book is out now. It's called 50 Risks to Take with Your Kids, a guide to building resilience and independence in the first 10 years.
Go
good stuff.
Go and climb a tree. Play with sticks. It sounds good.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Morning Show podcast. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe.
As always, you'll find more info on our website at themorningshow.com.au. And we'll catch you again weekdays following sunrise on Channel 7.